Okay. Canto 3, chapter 19, and we're going to start with text number 15. 3,
15,
19, 15. 3, 19, 15. And you have your computer. Is it on your computer? You need to look.
I think he's pulling it up on his phone.
Yeah, I know, but you have it on your computer as well.
I have to turn it on the rest of the way.
Okay. Just try to be helpful. If you want to see it, you can have it in front of you. Before I begin reading, just two things. A little background on what we read yesterday, where this section of the Bhagavatam is, particularly for our guest who wasn't here yesterday. Then a little sharing about an instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave about when he was speaking in Hindi, because your wife is not here because she doesn't understand English. So, this is Tamal Krishnamurti in his biography about Prabhupada, or his life with Prabhupada. I can't recall the place, location, where they were in India, but because of the audience, Prabhupada spoke in Hindi. And after Jai Radha Madhava, the sannyasis were looking at each other as Prabhupada started speak in Hindi. So they got up ready to leave. And Prabhupada said, "Where are you going?" "Prabhupada, we don't understand Hindi." He said, "You'll be purified just by hearing, even if you don't understand the language. Sit down." So the sound vibration, part of the message is the sound vibration of the Bhagavatam is purifying. Just like the holy name, whether we understand what the holy name is or not. The public who hear Harinam Sankirtan, they don't know what it is, but they're being purified because, just like the topic yesterday, the name and the person named are literally non-different. And the Bhagavatam is, according to Padma Purana, it's the sound vibration of the Supreme Lord. So it's one's in touch with the Supreme Lord, whether one understands the message or not, just by sound vibration. And the second is, it'll help her learn English. It'll help her learn, just to hear. So now, where we were yesterday, we were reading the first 14 verses of chapter 19, which follows chapter 18. And chapter 18, Lord Varaha appeared from the nostril of Brahma because Brahma was being approached by the demigods. Help! Earth has fallen out of its orbit, so Brahma was meditating on the situation. As he was meditating on the situation, at the size of a thumb, you know, it's small, boar appeared that grew big, 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 and then went to rescue the earth. And when he went to rescue the earth, Hiranyaksha came in a big battle. This is chapter 18. And the battle was raging on, and the Lord was sporting, he was Leela, and didn't look like he was going to prevail. So then Lord Brahma came and said, "Prevail, please, we're very afraid." So that's how chapter 19 begins, then the Lord, to please his devotees, the Lord Brahma and the demigods, sets more vigilantly to the task. But there's this chivalrous exchange back and forth where the Lord's mace falls and is blazing here and there, and Hiranyaksha throws a mace at the Lord. He caught the mace with his hand, threw the mace back at Hiranyaksha. The demon is humiliated. He didn't want to take the mace back. He never took a trident and threw the trident, hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength. The flying trident shone brilliantly in the sky. That was text 14. The personality of Godhead, however, tore to pieces with the Sudarshan disc, even as Indra cut off a wing of Garuda. So that's where we ended. Now, we're going to read verses 15 through 23. And many, there's no purport, but we'll just, some there's very short purport. Starting with text 15. The demon was enraged when his trident was cut to pieces by the discus of the personality of Godhead. He therefore advanced toward the Lord and, roaring aloud, struck his hard fist against the Lord's chest, which bore the mark of Sri Vatsa. He then went out of sight. Purport. Sri Vatsa is a curl of white hair on the chest of the Lord, which is a special sign of his being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vaikuntha Loka or in Goloka Vrindavan, the inhabitants are exactly of the same form as the Personality of Godhead, but by this Sri Vatsa mark on the chest of the Lord, he is distinguished from all others. Text 16. Hit in this manner by the demon, O Vidura, the Lord, who had appeared as the first boar, did not feel the least quaking of any part of his body any more than an elephant would when struck with a wreath of flowers. Report. As previously explained, the demon was originally a servitor of the Lord in Vaikuntha, but somehow or other he fell as a demon. His fight with the Supreme Lord was meant for his liberation. The Lord enjoyed the striking on his transcendental body, just as a fully grown-up father fighting with his child. Sometimes a father takes pleasure in having a mock fight with a small child. And similarly, the Lord felt Hiranyaksha striking on his body to be like flowers offered for worship. In other words, the Lord desired to fight in order to enjoy his transcendental bliss. Therefore, he enjoyed the attack. Text 17. The demon, however, employed many conjuring tricks against the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of Yoga Maya. At the sight of this, the people, that's the demigods observing, were filled with alarm and thought that the dissolution of the universe was near. Purport. The fighting enjoyment of the Supreme Lord with his devotee, who had been converted into a demon, appeared severe enough to bring about the dissolution of the universe. And this is the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the wavering of his little finger appears to be great and very dangerous movement in the eyes of the inhabitants of the universe. Text 18. Fierce winds began to blow from all directions, spreading darkness occasioned by dust and hailstorms. Stones came in volleys from every corner, as if thrown by machine guns. find it very interesting that there's a Sanskrit word that translates as machine guns. Text 19. But that's not so surprising because when, for example, Rama fires arrows, it's as if he was firing arrows that you used a machine gun, but as if, you know, he had 1,000 bows, and at once so many arrows going, and then again so many arrows and so many arrows, and it's not so surprising. Text 19. The luminaries in outer space disappeared due to the skies being overcast with masses of clouds, which were accompanied by lightning and thunder. The sky rained, this is a mystical arrangement by Hiranyaksha, the sky rained pus, blood, hair, stool, urine, and bones. O sinless Vidura, mountains discharged weapons of various kinds, and naked demonesses armed with tridents appeared with their hair hanging loose. Cruel and savage slogans were uttered by hosts of ruffian yakshas and rakshasas who all either marched on foot or rode on horses, elephants, and chariots. The Lord, the personal enjoyer of all sacrifices, now discharged the beloved Sudarshan, which is capable of dispersing all magical forces displayed by the demon. This is, I think, going to be our last verse. Even famous yogis and demons can sometimes enact very magical feats by their mystic power, but in the presence of Sudarshan Chakra, when it is let loose by the Lord, all such magical jugglery is dispersed. The instance of the quarrel between Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish is a practical example in the matter. Durvasa Muni wanted to display many magical wonders, but when the Sudarshana Chakra appeared, Durvasa himself was afraid and fled to various planets for personal protection. The Lord is described here as Tripat, which means that he is the enjoyer of three kinds of sacrifices. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord confirms that he is the beneficiary and enjoyer of all sacrifices, penances, and austerities. The Lord is the enjoyer of three kinds of yajna, as further described in Bhagavad Gita. There are sacrifices of goods, sacrifices of meditation, and sacrifices of philosophical speculation. Those on the path of Jnana, Yoga, and Karma have to come in the end to the Supreme Lord because Vasudeva Sarvamiti, the Supreme Lord, is the ultimate enjoyer of everything. This is the perfection of all sacrifice. Okay, so again, the background.
You're being too loud?
No. So the background is from a later canto, that Jai and Vijai were cursed. No, it's earlier in this canto. Jai and Vijai were cursed by the four Kumaras on the pretext that they were influenced by the modes of nature and had no place being in Vaikuntha, because people in Vaikuntha should be free from the modes of nature. They were barred, banned, prevented from entering Vaikuntha on the grounds that they weren't pure in devotion, but the Kumaras challenged them and said, you have no right to not let us in, and you don't belong here, and they curse them. Now, that we discussed this yesterday, but the background is it's a rasa topic, and the rasa topic is there's five primary rasas and seven secondary rasas. If you're reading Nectar of Devotion, it's described in detail. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the original text, that Nectar of Devotion is a translation of, it's even more detailed. Amazing detail. And rasa is the background of spiritual life or spiritual activity. So, primary rasas, neutrality, based on awe and veneration. God is great and almighty. Neutrality. Then advancing further is, let me serve him. So, dasya rasa, shanta rasa, dasya rasa. And then parental affection, friendship, like the cowherd boys, Krishna's friend, Sakya Rasa, Arjuna is Krishna's Sakya, his friend and his devotee. Parental affection, the affection of Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, or Vasudeva Devaki, or Dasarath and Kaushalya. Parental affection and conjugal affection, Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, etc., Lakshmi Narayan. Five primary rasas. So the Vedas teach us, the Shruti mantras teach us that the absolute truth is rasa. Raso vai saha. The absolute truth is rasa. So living entities are of innumerable varieties of those five and subcategories of rasa, because the devotee is complete and he enjoys rasa with his expansions, the living entities and so forth. So each one of us has an internal, natural, constitutional rasa. Just like a seed, there's a marigolds that are yellow and some that are orange and some that have blossoms that are small and some that are medium, some that are really big. And everything is there within the seed. And when the seed fructifies, what the essence is comes out. So similarly, in a seed-like form, the soul, presently covered or dormant in consciousness, has a natural rasa, or variegated mood of love in relation to the source of everything. So within, that means within the Lord, that rasa is already there, and there's this exchange between the two. So there's seven secondary rasas. There's a science to all of this described in Nectar Devotion. Seven secondary rasas are, they enhance the strength of the primary rasa. And without going through the whole detail, one of them is chivalry. Chivalry. Just like Grandfather Bhishma. His primary rasa, although he was grandfather, his primary rasa was servitorship towards Krishna. He loved Krishna that way. And he also, knowing the Lord intimately, understood the Lord has this desire for combat. Like, in the world, let's say wrestlers, they like wrestling, or competitive sportsmen, they like a good, they don't want to just compete with somebody that's a pushover, they want a good competition. Or a king will keep a wrestler in his court and, you know, enjoy getting thrashed by the wrestler and thrashing the wrestler. They just, it's an enjoyment for a king. It's not something horrible or fearful, it's enjoyment. King-like competition and combat. They like it. Like brahmanas, they don't They like austerity. For some people, austerity is, whoa. As brahmanas, it's happiness. Austerity is the wealth of the brahmanas. So it's not like how awful that a brahmana has to be austere. They like. That's their happiness. So within the Supreme Lord, there is this chivalrous rasa. As the devotees will sometimes, in intimacy, take on the position of acting in a chivalrous way, like Grandfather Bhishma did, firing arrows at Krishna. Because Krishna was in the way of his killing Arjuna. Now, he has affection for Krishna. Why does he want to kill Krishna, Arjuna, his dear friend? He knows that Krishna would never let that happen. He knows that Krishna would never, but he wants this chivalry. And because knowing Krishna wants the chivalry, and so he fires. And when he arrows, the statement is there in scripture, when the arrows of Bhishma hit Krishna, he was feeling happiness. Now normally you don't feel happiness, but it was a loving exchange. So in Vaikuntha, there's no combat. And so the gatekeepers, Jain Vijay, they didn't just stand at the gates of Vaikuntha. Sometimes they would be at his home or the palace, the place where he'd reside in Vaikuntha. They intimately were connected with him. And they knew that he has this chivalrous secondary rasa within him. So they prayed within their hearts. We know you have this desire. If you wish, who can be your equal? Who can give you a good tussle? But if you wish, we can do that. So they had a desire to serve in that way, and that desire to serve in that way was fulfilled. It's unique. We mentioned this yesterday, our acharyas say, it's not every time the Lord appears as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. It's giant Vijay who have fallen. It's exceptional and rare. But within the current yuga cycle, the appearance of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha are those three births: Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Shishupala, and Dattaparkra. That's what our acharyas describe. So that's the reference here. Hiranyaksha is actually Vijay, who has now come to this world to be in opposition to the Lord and give him a tussle. So he's enjoying. And Hiranyaksha, then another point is, Hiranyaksha had powers. He had mystic powers, and he was able to do mystical things, like disappearing and then having these apparitions of mystical appearances of wind and storm and showering down unclean things, demonesses who were naked, their hair flowing, and so forth. It's all a mystical display. Something similar happens in the fourth canto, where Dhruva Maharaj had a younger stepbrother, Anupam. And Anupam was out in the forest one time, and yakshas killed him. And when Dhruva came to know that the yakshas had killed his brother, that the details are not presented, well, you know what happened and how that took place, he wanted to avenge the death of his brother, so he went. And mighty army and ready to destroy the yaksha kingdom. He was in a get-back mood. not good, but that's what was smooth. So as he was approaching, there was some volleying back and forth, and then the yakshas saw how powerful Dhruva was, so they just, similarly, they just disappeared. And then from the sky, by mystic power, this terrible feature of darkness and showering of pillars and big rocks and trees and things coming down, Dhruva was bewildered. And then the brahmanas who were accompanying him said, "Dhruva, don't forget Krishna. You're empowered by Lord Vishnu, so don't be bewildered. Take shelter of Vishnu." So then he pulled his bow and arrow ready to fire, and the apparition just disappeared. It looked real, but it wasn't real. So the point in the purport is sometimes yogis, sometimes demons. Ravana had his tricks also, Indrajit and so forth. Sometimes demons have mystic powers. Here's an example of yakshas had mystic powers. And mystic powers may look like the real thing. Just like Ravana had a magician, forget his name, but he was able to produce a head that looked just like Ram's head, and a bow that looked just like Ram's bow that Sita was very familiar with. And the magician came into the Ashok garden and placed the head in front of her, said, "Ram's dead. See his bow, you recognize his bow, that's his bow. Last night they all arrived, and when they were in their sleep, we went out and killed them all. They're all dead. Hanuman is dead, Ram is dead, they're all dead. Now surrender." It was just a mystic display. And anyway, so Sita was beside herself with grief, and aside from, you know, what happened next. Some persons have mystic powers. And the mystic power may be taken as, you know, this person is God, or the mystic display is real. But the personality of Godhead, in this case, Lord Varaha, wasn't bewildered by it. And the power of his Sudarshan Chakra was able to dispel the mystic display. And then final reference is given here to Maharaj Ambarish. This is described in the 9th canto of Bhagavatam. Maharaj Ambarish is a perfected worshipper of the Supreme Lord. And so much honor was going to Maharaj Ambarish that Durvasa Muni was envious. "I'm a brahmana, he's being honored more than me. He's a king." So in a fit of his Durvasa Muni anger, he, over trifle, the detail, but he uttered a mantra and snatched some hair from his head and dashed it to the ground, and a fiery demon was created, mystic, and sent the fiery demon to kill Maharaj Ambarish. But Sudarshan intervened and killed the demon. And then Sudarshan began pursuing Durvasa Muni, the one who released the fiery demon, the mystic power, by mystic power. And finally, after visiting Lord Rama and Lord Shiva, he went to Svetadvip and approached Lord Vishnu. This is your Sudarshan Chakra. "I've offended your devotee. I didn't understand his greatness. Please forgive me. And by the way, can you remove Sudarshan Chakra?" You have to go back to Maharishi Ambarish. He's the one you offended. Sudarshan will leave you alone. If you receive the forgiveness of Maharishi Ambarish, that's what to do when someone is offended. You go to that person who's been offended and seek forgiveness, because otherwise reaction is going to be there. In this case, even the Lord wouldn't remove the reaction. The person who was offended had to forgive, and then the reaction was gone. So, Sudarshan Chakra is now being released by Lord Varaha, which means Hiranyaksha is finished. The mystical display was gone, but then, it's play, because Lord Vishnu doesn't need anyone's help to do anything. He could have taken care of this right away. But even it was that the demigods were in some anxiety. Uh-oh, devastation. There's a really nice passage in Krishna's pastime for something similar takes place, where Krishna gets wrapped up in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. And being wrapped in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, the residents of Vrindavan are in this terrible predicament, because normally when they have difficulty, they call to Krishna for help. But now here's a situation where Krishna is in difficulty. What are you going to do? So they're ready to jump in the poisonous lake and give up their lives, because we'll do whatever they can do to try to... How do you rescue Krishna if Krishna can't rescue himself? What are they going to do? Terrible distress. But then Krishna recognized, they're in so much anxiety, I better get out of the coils of Kaliya. He made an arrangement and became released. So similarly, this is a rasa issue, with looking like, as the demigods are looking on, it looks like Lord Varaha may be in trouble, because Hiranyaksha is so powerful. He's got all these mystic powers. And then he finished it. So it's also the rasa of astonishment. In all circumstances with the Lord's pastimes, there's exchanges of love, and appearances of things may not be what they are because of those exchanges of love. And because I've just been spending a lot of time speaking about the prayers of Prabhupada, similar situation arrives there with when Lord Nrisimhadev appears, half man, half lion, kills Hiranyakashipu and all of his soldiers. The demigods, seeing the Lord in this angry mood, want to go pacify him. They offer prayers, and no one, all of the whole chapter of prayers, and he's not pacified. And it's then the next chapter begins, saying that the goddess of fortune, even she was afraid. And she was astonished at this Adbhuta form of the Lord. Adbhuta means wonderful. It's Adbhuta Shringa. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he explains, it's rasa. It's the rasa of astonishment. And the rasa of astonishment was exhibited by Lakshmi, so that she and the demigods could have their primary rasa elevated. That is to say, when secondary rasas are present, the primary rasa is still there, but it's eclipsed for some time by the secondary rasa. In this case it was chivalry, and in this case with Lord Shingadeva, it's astonishment. Those are two of the seven secondary rasas that Vishwanath explains. She was doing like she felt what she felt by the influence of Yogamaya. And Yogamaya was inducing her to not recognize the form of the Lord, feel astonished at seeing the form of the Lord, and in that mood of astonishment, her affection for the Lord hit another plateau or another spike. It's the conjugal rasa had seemed to be covered, and this other strong mood became very strong, which then brought in Prahlad to come forward and speak, demigod saying, "We can't do it, you can do it." Although you're just a six-year-old boy, he appeared for you and you go forward. So, rasa is enjoyment. Although it may not look like enjoyment when you're astonished and seemingly fearful, it doesn't look like enjoyment. But it's transcendental rasa in relation to the Supreme Lord, arranged by his internal potency. So, all of these kinds of things, what do we know about rasa? Except from our acharyas, like one of the principal acharyas for us is in the followers of Lord Chaitanya Rupa Goswami, who teaches about rasa in Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. Bhakti, the service to the Supreme Lord, it starts with just service, but it then invites one into a whole sindhu or ocean of bhakti rasa. And when you know, neophyte doesn't know much more than, you know, just swimming. But when one becomes more experienced at swimming, there's all varieties of rasa swimming, and you know, relishing the happiness that the Lord feels and the devotees of the Lord feel, giving the Lord, stimulating his happiness or their happiness being stimulated by the Lord's exchange with them. And that's in the state of pure, unalloyed devotion. That ocean is waiting for us. And even we're way over here on this side of the ocean, we can get some sense of what it is just from the mercy of Acharya's explaining. This is what it is. So then we can learn little by little. Any discussion?
Krishna, thank you. I have some questions regarding this rasa topic, but my friend Raghu, yesterday night he wanted to ask some questions, so it was suggested that maybe he can come to the Bhavanam class and have a discussion with you.
Okay.
So if you comment, maybe he can ask his questions.
Sure. We'll go back to the rasa question. Yeah. And both. We can do both.
Okay.
Depends on how much time you have.
Sure. So, in case you have any questions, if you want to have a discussion, you can.
About, I wanted some more elaborations on the japa. And,
okay.
Yesterday night, while chanting some mantras, I tried to be in the same bhava as you tried to suggest. Abhinavatvam Namanamaha. So,
Abhinavatvam. Yeah. Tvam is having the quality of.
Yeah, Abhinavatvam Namanamaha.
Yeah.
So, actually, when we pick up a practice or or a mantra or some chanting or recitation.
Yeah.
The first phase would be learning it. There will be complete concentration in that. So all of the attention is focused on that.
Yes.
Eventually when we memorize it, then till a particular time that there will be some fascination towards that mantra and it will be completely complete attention will be towards that, because recalling that would require some efforts.
Yes.
But eventually it so happens that it becomes so much accustomed that the mantra flows, but our attention would be thinking all over the would be all over the place. We'll be thinking about so many things in the world. So how to what's the next step after that? That was my query.
Well, I hope your schedule permits you to come to Chicago for the 4th of July weekend. Well, exactly, June 29, Friday, June 30th, Saturday, and June 1, Sunday. Because what you're asking, it's one of the focuses. We have a festival of the Holy Name, but I'll just touch on it now, but that'll be expanded when we're together. You know, in the Association of Brothers who are going the next step, or being encouraged to go the next step at least. There's a big gap between what we know and where we're at. So application first is concept, or you know, notionally accepting, understanding a philosophical topic, and then applying the philosophical topic. So the next one of the starting points, one of the plan, this is in my plan, it may change as we go along, as I go along, but this very point is going to be a starting point, because first just a little background. We're covered. Our spiritual consciousness is there but dormant. Like a seed. It's dormant. Life is there, and it could sit hundreds of years, and it'll stay dormant. Then there's the sprouting of the seed. And then the life comes out. Until then, it's just dormant. Similarly, our Krishna consciousness is already there. Our spiritual awareness is already there, but it's covered. And sound helps awaken. And the mantra, this general, everyone can receive it mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, has a special power to awaken that dormant consciousness, specifically the mood of serving. So there's the key, is serving. Now when there's serving, in the material world, that's demeaning. Don't become a servant, become a ruler. Become the controller, become the enjoyer, the proprietor. You know, it's just the mirror opposite of spiritual consciousness. The awakening of spiritual consciousness is service. So the next step is not just the concept of the name and the person are the same. It's the mode of service. Because otherwise it's elusive. Or let's say it differently. Otherwise, material consciousness will cover over your attempt. Because material consciousness is, I want to be the enjoyer. That's why we come, it's in Bhagavad Gita. Raga, dvesha. Raga, coveting, or wanting to I want the position of king. But there's a problem. What's that? Someone's already the king. They're seated on the throne. I covet the position of being the enjoyer of property. But there's somebody that's already the enjoyer of prakriti. That's dvesha. Raga dvesha samutina dvandva mohena Bharata. This delusion of duality, dvandva mohena. We're perplexed. So you can take a concept that's true, the name and the object named are the same, but you won't be able to enter into it as long as I'm the enjoyer consciousness. You can go up a little bit, back down again. Go up a little bit, back down again. So the operative principle, the little light that goes on that can change the whole paradigm is, I meant who I am is tiny fragmental part of the Supreme, and my happiness is in service to the Supreme. And that's awakened by the mantra, Hare Krishna mantra. So that's if I'm in the mood of pleasing Krishna, if I'm in the mood of pleasing Krishna, to the degree that I'm in the mood of pleasing Krishna, to that degree I'll be able to understand the name is Krishna. Because the material world, names aren't the thing. Chair. And the sound vibration, chair, they're different. Water and the quenching capacity of water. The sound and the object are different. In spiritual reality, the sound and the object are the same. But we can't realize that in material consciousness. And material consciousness is raga dvesha. I want to be the enjoyer of prakriti. And I'm envious of the one who is the enjoyer of prakriti. He's interfering with my enjoyment. So it's simultaneous. So the next step is the awakening of the service mood through the chanting of the mantra. Until that in proportion to that awakening, then I'll be able to understand. Nami and Nama are the same. So we're going to be discussing this and experimenting with it in little, you know, procedures. You know, workshop kind of procedures. We'll go into it right now. But it's a cultivation. Anushilana in Rupa Goswami's language. You ready for some philosophy? Are you ready to hear some philosophy? The philosophical background behind what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm about to do. Bhakti has a definition. And a good definition is both inclusive and exclusive. It says what the thing is and what it isn't, just so you don't get confused of what it isn't. It is, and it isn't. So, Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti is really simple. It's not karma, fruit of activity. It's not speculation of the mind. It's not fruit of activity or mental speculation. If that's what it isn't, what is it? Because our lives are largely made up of fruit of activity and trying to understand things by speculating what it is. Since we're children. And then we hear from some authority that says whatever we hear. And then we accept that as the reality, but we don't really know. Anyway. Here's what bhakti is. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. And Anushila, this is now that's verse is a verse from Bhakti Rasa Amrita. To understand the rasa of bhakti, that the name and the object named are not different, there has to be awakening of bhakti, the mood of service. So This is a definition of bhakti. And Jiva Goswami explains, this shilanam has a dhatu, little bit, dhatu of shil. To understand a verb, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but he says, to understand a verb, you need to know the dhatu. From the dhatu comes the meaning. So, shil has two parts, non-active and active. And the active has its parts, the body, the contemplations of the mind. So this is how to go the next step. The body, what you like, you know, what the tongue and the lips and the, what, you know, the making the sound. Then there's the mind, its contemplations, thinking, feeling, then emotion. So those are active elements of shila. Shila is, I'm used to hearing, shila means activity or conduct or behavior.
Yeah, I said verb.
Yeah, so Jiva Goswami is taking it down to the Sanskrit dhatu. It has active elements and then it has non-active elements. And the non-active element of shil is the deepest held convictions, like at the soul level. So at the soul level, if we think that we're the enjoyer of Prakriti, then that's going to determine our activity or conduct. And if the activity or conduct is rooted in the understanding, the concept, the acceptance, the fundamental foundational sense of not just a value, but the sense of most meaningful essence of life is at the soul level, we're parts of the Supreme. According to Bhagavad Gita, that's who we are. Mentioned yesterday, now explained again. We're Mame Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, Bhagavad Gita. The soul is a jiva that's an angsa, bark of a big fire. That's who we are. That's who we are. We're a spiritual entity, Brahman, but tiny, minuscule, very, very, very tiny. The Supreme is Vibhu, we're very, very tiny, Anu. So we are, tiny spark of consciousness. And we're meant for service to the Supreme. So that's the other part. Anukul Yena. Again, this is a philosophical background to what I'm, the other message, same message, just the philosophy behind it. Anukul means favorable or pleasing. Just like the contrast, Shishupal was always, his mind was on Krishna with hatred. Kamsa, his mind was always on Krishna with fear. But it wasn't favorable. It wasn't bhakti. Bhakti is favorable. Anukul Yena. And again, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but Jiva Goswami says this phrase, Anukul Yena, when that suffix is added, it means it's the instrumental case. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, so I asked Sanskrit scholar, what does that mean? It means it's imperative. It's not optional. Bhakti is favorable to Krishna. So now, back to your question. What's the next step? Cultivation is, I'm not there yet. There's something I understand, descending knowledge from Scripture, and here's my consciousness today. So the next step is you cultivate. Following the example of perfected souls or elevated souls, Anu, means to follow. You follow the example of great personalities. And Jiva Goswami says, Anu means constantly, not intermittently. Anu Shilana. So, get practice with, what's the next step? Body. You know, the tongue has these functions of tasting and vibrating. So we taste, we take only that which has been first offered to Krishna, it's right in Bhagavad Gita. And we vibrate sounds on a regular basis, at least by practice, sounds that are elevating to consciousness, spiritual sound vibration. Bhagavatam and mantra and spiritual sound vibration. There are contemplations. The mind functions as an active element. Goes to trying to understand the message of scripture, trying to understand Bhagavad Gita and so forth and so on. And then feelings. Now in real life, our feelings are all over the place. Our contemplations are all over the place. Our behavior is all over the place. So, but focus it on what is going to be pleasing to Krishna. Why? Because that's who I am. That's the concept that's different than my conditioned concept of who I am. Who I am is I'm an enjoyer. And I enjoy these things. That's who I am. I enjoy sports, or I enjoy making money, or I enjoy studies, or I enjoy hurting people, or I enjoy, you know, being harsh, or I enjoy whatever I enjoy. That's who I am. I'm Donald Trump. I enjoy insulting people. That's who I am. So, that's not who we are. So the next step is stepping out, detachment from who we aren't, and cultivating an understanding of who we are. And with a spiritual conception. And on a regular basis, at least, you know, daily, if not, you know, throughout the day, starting with, you know, like I was saying about with Prahlad, this freshman undergraduate student Prahlad.
He did not know.
Oh, okay. He was seated in the front.
When he had taken care of the books, is he?
No. So he was in a green sweatshirt. He was serving prasadam for some time.
I remember.
Okay. His parents are devotees. He's just this quiet, little insecure, but you know, nice young man. He was sharing, I don't have time, you know, my studies are like up to here, and I don't feel good about it, but, you know. So, we had the discussion two nights ago. What's the next step? Because I know what's inside. I know his family. Because they're from Chicago, I know his parents, really nice people, and he's a nice person, just like a little overwhelmed. So I know what's inside. So the next step, 20 minutes. Next step for him, and just like maintain it, Anu Shilana, based upon what I know is inside him. He knows. The notion isn't foreign to him. It's just his circumstances are overwhelming. He doesn't have the spiritual strength to overcome those circumstances. So start with. Now, somebody else may be the next step. The next step is have a deeper understanding of what the whole process is, what the bhakti process is. It's a cultivation from where I am, based upon teachings of perfected souls that give us a roadmap of how to get from point A to point B to point C to, you know, to the destination. It's the, so the cultivation of a mood that says, I am, my existence is a tiny spark, a conscious self within the body. When that conscious self leaves the body, death. The conscious self is within the body, there's life. And that life is conscious and consciousness. Consciousness spreads through the body and extends outside. And I am meant as it's, as that spark. Next, as a spark, I'm meant for being in connected with, in service to the Supreme. And that's me. That's like a spiritual conception of self. And now let me develop that through the medium of service to that Supreme. I don't know the length and breadth of it, but I don't have opposition to the concept. I want to learn. Is it so? I don't have an opposition to it. I want to learn. Is it so? Let me experiment with the experimental tools that are given. Just like I was a chemistry major, biochemistry. In pre-med. So, you know, we learn something in the textbook and then we go to the lab and you add this and that and with a certain Bunsen burner and every time it works. It's a science. So it's the theory and then there's the practical application. So same. Theory, then let me try it. That's all. That's all. The next step is let me apply this spiritual science and see what happens. And the result is predictable. Just like in chemistry lab. You put this and that in the beaker and da-da-da-da and crystals come. Every time. It's a science. Just as chemistry, so there's spiritual science. I just have to... The problem isn't in the process, but the problem is I'm distracted. And my attention goes all over the place, like you described. So what's the next step is, trying to follow your question, is let me awaken the bhakti principle. And then it won't just, the mind will go, once I've learned what the mantra is, the mind will go all over the place because I have this bhakti principle that I'm working with. Probably just cultivating it, you know, seeing where it goes. You ever, I'll give a little example and I think I'm done responding. What's the next step? You know what physical therapy is, or have you ever had to visit a physical therapist?
My sister is a
physical therapist. Oh. Okay. So you understand the principle. Okay. I had to see a physical therapist at one point, without the detail. Meniscus tear, big bulging swelling in my knee, I couldn't move my knee, I thought I had to have surgery, the surgery, you know, all the tests and MRI and blah, blah, blah. You don't need surgery, you need physical therapy. So I went to the physical therapist, they tested this and that, and I couldn't move, you know, my knee wouldn't move more than that, just like, it was painful. I said, okay. And they gave me some exercises, 10 of those and 15 of those, 3 times a day. I couldn't, like, they sat me on a stationary bike. I couldn't go around. My knee wouldn't bend. I said, okay, don't stress it. And it's just a matter of, you know, working with the muscle structure so that the swelling in the body would diminish without steroids and things like that. Just natural. And then there's another really important element that I learned from the physical therapist that applies to the bhakti principle, bhakti life. When she took all the, you know, tests and this and that, said, okay, now, what would you like? Like, you know, goal. or purpose. And I said, well, I want to be able to walk up and down the stairs like an old man. Okay, great. Wrote it down. What else? I hadn't really thought about it. I said, well, think about it, because it's important. So I came back the next time. I said, you know what? I know what I want. She said, really good. Let me pull out the clipboard. She said, I'm going to India. Oh, I have a friend that's going to India too. Where are you going? I said, well, it's a place called Vrindavan. Is it? Was it near? Is it near? It's near Delhi, because my friend's going to Delhi. Yeah, it's very near. Oh, tell me about it. Tell my friend to go visit this place. It's just like, you know, bubbly lady. And I said, well, it's the place where Krishna was appeared. And there's a mountain. Didn't give the name. There's a mountain in that place in Vrindavan. I want to be able to walk around. I'm going there in the fall and set up. You do this physical, you do the physical therapy, meditating on what your goal is. It'll help you reach your goal. And then when I was doing the exercises, 10 of these and 15 of those and 3 times a day, it was really boring. I was doing it, but it wasn't energized. And then when I was meditating on, I want to walk around Govardhan Hill because I love Govardhan Hill. Not only I was energized, but it felt the healing was helping better. So the purpose behind what you're doing is really important. The purpose behind mantra chanting, so it's not just I'm not distracted, but the real purpose. It's not just so that you're not distracted. Not just to become a meditator or become powerful by meditation. That was in the things that we read in the purport this morning. Krishna is the Lord of all sacrifice. Bhoktaram yoga tapasam. So there's sacrifice, right in Bhagavad Gita, sacrifice of objects, sacrifice of the mind in meditation, sacrifice of knowledge and cultivation of knowledge. He's the Lord of all. He's the one that's meant to be pleased. That's bhakti. It's inside already. It's dormant. Just need to be awakened. So if you have a sense of what the goal is, and you strive by right means, it's powerful. The fullness of the powerfulness, you'll feel it. No one will have to tell you. You'll feel it. There's an example in the Bhagavatam. Just like when a person has been fasting for some time and they begin to break the fast, predictably, just like the chemistry lab, 3 things are going to happen. Hunger will subside. Strength will come back to the body. You've fasted for some time, you probably know your body gets weak. Strength comes back to the body. And then one feels satisfied. At some point, you know, you say, no, no thank you, I don't need anything more. I'm full. Tushti, pushti, and I forget the third. Yeah. One feels similarly with bhakti process when applied properly. Predictably. Virakiranyatracha, that's the detachment from other things, that the mind being distracted subsides. You don't have to struggle with it. I mean, you make an effort to keep the mind focused, but it's not like this endless struggle. Because there's a sense of fullness inside. I want to serve Krishna. Starts to awaken. And para isha anubhav. Anubhav is feelings for para isha. That's an emotion. You know, back to the definition of bhakti. There's this emotional element. I have feelings. I want to be in service and detachment from other things. Gradually. It isn't like, you know, it's not 0 or 10. It's gradual. like physical therapy. Now I can sit and, you know, for hours and just, I've done it. And, you know, it's good exercise. And it's purposeful, it's not just exercise, but it builds the quads. I learned this from the therapist. So that where the shin bone and the thigh bone, now the meniscus is broken, the muscles take, they're shock absorbers that take care of the problem. That was missing. They just have to build the muscle structure and then everything's fine. I can. But the goal is not just so I can ride a bicycle. The goal is I want to be in service to Krishna, or in that particular case, I wanted to be able to walk around Govardhan Hill. Because I love Govardhan. That's the next step.
So, do we have time?
I don't know. You two have to do it. 5 minutes before 9 o'clock.
You're
fine.
So this goal, it depends on the individual, I suppose.
It depends on an individual, but there's general. There's both. The goal, general, is I have forgotten my eternal relationship with the Supreme Loving Person. I want love, and I want to be loved. Universal. I'm looking to repose my loving tendency on other things, or something that's inadequate, insufficient. So I'm not satisfied, and I move to the next thing and next thing. So repose that loving propensity on the Supreme.
There'll be some individual goals.
There's intermediate goals, but that's a long-term goal. And then my relationship with Krishna is totally individual, different than anyone else's. But that's for me to discover. I don't know yet.
So it might happen that during times of turmoil or during times of some kind of maybe a health issue, an adversity. So it happens that the mind...
Yes, goes to those things.
It will be in a tussle, in a toss.
However, what you're saying is exactly the discussion I had with, what's her name last night, the lady?
Shitaji.
Huh?
Shitaji, that Indian woman?
No, the older American lady.
Annette.
I sat with Annette. Do you know who she is? You don't know. It's an older lady, kind of sandy-colored hair, American lady. Sat down, waiting for him to finish prasadam. And I looked at her and said, "You're very peaceful." And she said, "Sometimes I'm not so peaceful. I get into quarrels with a certain person." Didn't go into it. I said, "That's not you, that's the mind." And the end of the conversation. So what you're saying is, if you're grounded in Sat, this American fellow that you were speaking with primarily, kind of sandy colored hair, reddish sandy colored hair, he got it right away. He said, "So what you're saying is, if you're connected to the eternal, when upheavals come in the temporary, you're stable. From that position of connection to the eternal, you can deal with the temporary, whether it's happiness or distress. Happiness can be as distracting as distress is distracting. And I become the enjoyer of this good fortune. And I become distracted by the ill fortune. And there's plenty of ill fortune, because by design the place is dukkhalayam or shashvatam. It's by design."
These tattvas or principles also do not stay in mind during distress. Even the memory gets suppressed.
No, that's in the immature. In the mature stage, it stays with you. It's like a seed that grows and grows and grows and grows. When it's mature, the wind may be blowing, there may be a storm, there may be whatever, the scorching sun. In the mature stage, that creeper of bhakti is your ballast. It's your stabilizer. Keeps you balanced. It keeps you centered. Keeps you fixed. Because it's unchanging. Amidst the changing. The world in which we live is a place of duality. And that's connection is an absolute connection. It's not changing. Nishchala. Unwavering. That connection doesn't depend upon the mind. The mind will go to that in the mature stage automatically. You don't even have to like remind yourself. It'll just go there. That's in a mature stage. Asakti, attachment. Now we're attached to the temporary. And so when the temporary goes bonkers, that's where the mind goes. Because we're attached to the temporary. Or you sit down and chanting your mantra, your mind goes to the temporary because that's where we're attached to. Even though you're cultivating spirituality, the mind's attached to the temporary. So it's just unstable. So stability comes by the cultivation of attachment to what's stable. Same thing in a different way. By contacting the supreme pure, that which is impure becomes pure, including the mind, including the senses. Somebody may be attracted to money. Somebody may be attracted to the opposite sex. Somebody may be attracted to food. Somebody may be attracted to honor. Somebody may be attracted to sports. It's all in the mind. It's not at the soul level. So the mind goes to those things depending upon what our attachments are. That's lifetimes, not even just this one. It's our affinity for matter. It keeps us bound lifetime after lifetime to the material world. So that's the struggle, is that bondage to affinity for matter. Krishna says, you lose. Prakriti is stronger. Mama maya duratyaya. Very difficult. But one can easily go beyond that struggle by taking shelter. Mamevye prapadyante. Prapadyante. Surrender. Mayami tamtarantite. You can easily cross beyond the struggle. Now that takes some cultivation, some faith, you know, little increments of progress. But when the increments of progress are there, the disturbances come, the storm comes in, and you're fixed. The storm leaves, you're fixed. Good fortune comes, you're fixed. Good fortune departs, you're fixed. That's easy to say. It's another thing to cultivate. But that's spiritual cultivation. Spiritual strength comes beyond our own strength. It's a strength we don't know because we're weak. We're covered. We're by the illusory potency, we're strongly covered in forgetfulness of who we are. Everything. Reality. We're forgetful. It's not a pleasant forgetfulness either. It's like a bad dream that doesn't end. It keeps going and going and going. You want to wake up and it keeps going. You know it's only a dream and you keep dreaming anyways. Ever had those? It's there is another reality. We all have inclinations, most people. Those that are spiritually searching have some inclination. But it's a permanent reality. It doesn't change. as it becomes more mature, it displaces the illusion. You're not unconscious of what's around you, but it's not your life. You deal with it, but your life is the spiritual reality. And you do the external, the same as this definition that Rupa Goswami gives. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. That the foundational conceptions of what's really important. That was the question I was asking people that last night. Who am I? What's really important to me? It's protection from the illusory energy. It doesn't stop the illusory energy from being, from doing its thing. President Trump is still going to be President Trump. You become God conscious, he's going to still do what he does. Winter season and summer season are going to come and go. But how you respond to that is going to be different. How you feel inside is going to be different. That's the life of a transcendentalist. And then they can give a gift to anyone, everyone, those close to you and those distant from you, because it's something that you're carrying. It starts with cultivation. Good association, four things. Good association, regular spiritual practice, sadhana, reading and trying to understand, and taking prasadam. Sadhana, good association, reading, so you have these, the concepts get refined and refined, and Krishna prasadam, it purifies. And little by little, the seeds start to sprout, and things that you weren't able to understand before become understandable, at least, a little bit. And then that's the cultivation of the bhakti creeper. It's already there. This has to be awakened. Bhagavad Gita's message is how to awaken it. Some food for thought, huh? No, she wants to ask something, but you wanted to ask some rasa questions.
Sure.
I don't know, it's a little related. It's a quick question. How to recognize real happiness? If you feel happy, maybe you do, you want some devotional service or something, what you call devotional service, and you feel happy, or you feel happy in your life, everything is fine. Can you call this real happiness, or how do you recognize it?
The reality is, our consciousness is mixed. So it's some of both. Just take that as an assumption. It's some of both. It's in language of nectar of devotion, it's a shadow of the real thing. It's not the real thing, it's a shadow of the real thing. But the shadow tells you something, or the reflection tells you something about the real thing.
Still, we expect that when we practice devotional service that we're going to advance and feel a little bit of this happiness.
Well, what you should expect is purification.
So how to recognize when this purification happens?
Well, it may not be in the form of happiness. Let's say it in the negative. It may be in the form of adversity, or in Bhaktisiddhanta's language, trial, fire of ordeal. That's purification, not happiness. And in the worldly sense of happiness, ordeal is ordeal. It's something you don't like, but it's purification. No, so how does one know that its purification is taking place? A lot of that has to do with faith. And, the association that you keep. That, they, you know, you can ask the association that you're keeping, how am I doing? And, from Scripture, how am I doing? Like, because it was mentioned earlier, the health situations. I know somebody that has chronic health for, nicest devotee for maybe a decade. One thing after the next thing after the next thing after the next thing after the next thing. And it's and they're active person. They can't. If they try, they get a little strength and try to get active, then they relapse back to where they were. So, purification. It's not punishment. It's their realization is they're left with nothing but Krishna's shelter. Like, Sanatana Goswami and his illness. It was purification. Not that he was impure and he needed purification, but it was just an intimacy of a relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when your mind is going, here's the litmus test. When your mind is going to favorable service to Krishna with the circumstance that I'm in, that's purification. And if the mind is whining, complaining, or griping, or, your thoughts are on yourself and your own happiness, that's not purification. Or you haven't gotten the lesson yet. You need some of that in order to stand, that's miserable, I don't want that. I want Krishna's happiness. And then,
when we are chanting, what should be our focus? As you explained in nice response to this question, service attitude.
Mm.
But there are many rasas, because we are coming in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came here to propagate Ujjwala Rasa, which is Madhurya Rasa.
Yes.
So, are we required to think?
No. In the initial stages, we don't have a clue. And it's presumptuous. In fact, it's offensive and impersonal to imagine something. So, just the mood of service. That is anukulyena. Just stay there. My service should be done in such a way that it's favorable to Krishna. And how do I know it's favorable? Well, there's scripture and there's sadhu and that's I in guru, and I require those indicators. What is favorable? And I may get it wrong sometimes. But I want to go back to, that's the compass that I'm following. That it should be favorable and pleasing to Krishna. In that mood of service, then rasa can unfold. And without that, then rasa will not unfold. It's just like Lord Brahma, he received two mantras. The first mantra was purification. The second mantra, he began to understand his rasa. According to the text of Brahma Samhita, he had at least the beginning of an understanding, not a mature, but a beginning of an understanding of his rasa with Krishna, with the maid servant. But, first is, I'm a servant, before comes rasa. And servant means what's favorable. Okay, had an interesting morning, and I think I'm going to have to go on to the next thing.